A little bit. We are in the middle of Mishle, and when I say the middle, I mean we're towards the end. Perek Chav Tes, no worries. We have other books if you want. Chapter 29, we start chapter 29 today. There are only 31 chapters in Mishle. That's 31 chapters. We are up to 29, so we go 29, 30, and then 31. The middle of 31 is Esh Hayil, so that should be fun. We'll spend some more time focusing on that. Okay, some psukim tonight are actually continuations of the previous parak. Interestingly enough, the Hebrew doesn't have any break in it. The Hebrew oftentimes will have some kind of spacing, which implies an indentation, a new paragraph, a new topic. But here there is no, even if it is a new chapter, it's not necessarily a new topic. So that's implied by that. So if you look at the first pasuk of the 29th chapter, the pasuk says, Ish tochachos. Already we have to stop. What is Ish tochachos? You couldn't translate that literally in two different ways. Either Ish tochachos means a man who gives rebuke, or a man who needs rebuke. Ish tochachos, a man of rebuke, is, you know, the trickiness of English also. A man of rebuke could either mean one who gives rebuke or one who's rebuked. Exactly. So ish tochachos here, at least in context, implies that it's referring to the difficulty that the person has in accepting the rebuke. So ish tochachos presumably means that he is one who gets rebuked. Ish tochachos makshe oref. This is that context. He is of a stiff neck, which at least biologically just means he's Jewish, right? We're a stiff-necked people, as we say. Stubborn. So stubborn, stiff-necked, same type of thing. So makshe oref. So a person that needs rebuke, but is instead stubborn, meaning he doesn't take the rebuke, he doesn't receive it kindly. Pesa yishaver v'ein marpe. Suddenly he will break, and he will not have a healer. Lots of, not ambiguous, but I'd say interpretable words in this pasuk. So ishtachos makcha oref. We have enough precedent to interpret that to mean a person needs rebuke but is not taking it. Okay. Peta means suddenly, yishaver, you will break. So I find, and maybe this is wrong, but I find the words makshe and yishaver to be too coincidentally connected, juxtaposed here. Makshe means to harden, and yishaver means to break. There's a concept in English, I'm not really sure if there's a Hebrew corollary, but a concept in English which is used often in the sports world, which is bend but don't break. You ever heard that phrase, bend but don't break? Which means that sometimes you'll have to give a little bit, but if you have the right amount of flexibility, then you won't break. If, however, you don't give, if you're not flexible, in the context of sports, it really refers to the fact of sort of maybe if the other team is, you know, the other team is doing well against you, don't let them do overwhelmingly well, right? Bend, but don't break. You know, in football, it means give up a field goal, not a touchdown. In basketball, it means give up a two-pointer, not a three-pointer. In baseball, it might mean give up a hit, but not a run, right? So give a little bit, but don't break. Bend, but don't break. So I find, and this is obviously my own thing, but I don't see any mepharshim talking about this, but I see, personally, the juxtaposition between Maksha and Yisha there in this way. That a person who's so stubborn, who's not even flexible enough to hear what the other person is saying, right? Maksha Oref. So that kind of person, Peta Yisha there, that kind of person is going to break. There's the hardness of the person's stubbornness, and then the eventual breaking of that person's, you know, personality. Now, what exactly does that mean in a more rational context, in a more rational interpretation? A person who's so stubborn sometimes will have no, obviously he won't improve, but he also won't have any coping mechanisms for when stuff gets really, really bad. You know, so for a person who makes a few mistakes and the principal, the teacher, whatever, you know, calls him into the office, tells him, you got to do better, you got to work on yourself here, you got to work on yourself there, and he just refuses, right? He or she just says, you know, I know you want me to do that, but I refuse. I'm going to stick to my ways. So eventually, yishaver means you're going to have to expel them from school, right? They're going to have to, and maybe even worse. You know, that kid, who knows what's going to happen to that kid when they are told that they're not making it, when they're told they're not successful. If eventually they go into the workforce and they also aren't going to be flexible, so then yishaver v'ein marpei. At that point, when it gets to such an extent where the person is broken down, whatever that situation is, it's broken. You can't put it back together. Right? The child says, okay, now you've expelled me from school. Now they're in prison. Whatever it is. Now they want to come back. No, it's too late. It's too late at that point. It's not possible to rectify after bending and bending and bending or trying to, and the person was stiff-necked. So then ultimately they're going to break, and then because of their inflexibility, they won't be able to put back together. Again, we're talking in sort of vagaries here. I'm listening to a book now called Slow Productivity. Slow Productivity. And really, it's not. I'm only thinking about it because of this pasuk. It's okay. They'll leave soon. It's all right. They'll leave soon. Thank you. But this book by Cal Newport. I read a book from him from a few years ago called Deep Work. He has a couple other books about what he calls digital minimalism. It's exactly what it sounds like, which is, you know, stay off the phones, stay off the emails. He is notoriously unresponsive on email. And he tells people, don't email me, I will not respond. Because he doesn't want to check his email and get bogged down and distracted and go on these, you know, half-hour detours from what he's supposed to be doing because he's responding to one email, then another email. And oftentimes that happens. You know, I get stuck also with a text or whatever. It's very hard, and you know, I'm caught between a rock and a hard place because I have two bad habits that contradict each other. One is that if I, you know, I get a text for a Shiloh or something like that, someone asks me a question, so then I feel like I have to respond to it. It's right there. I'm going to be distracted. Hi, and then the next is that if I don't respond to it, so I'm not going to get back to it. Right. So the reason why I feel the urge to make sure that I answer things relatively quickly is because I'm afraid it's going to get stuck in my, you know, in the backlog, and I don't remember to get back to it. And therefore, that sort of bolsters my first bad habit, which is getting distracted by it, because I feel like I have to take care of it now. Obviously, there are ways to manage that better, and I'm trying to develop that. But
I really appreciate it.
Yes, I try to, Amir Tashem, but it's not always at the right time. It's not always the best time, and it's a skill to develop, to make sure that you can respond at the right time, as opposed to right away or as opposed to never. So that's a skill sometimes if you're in the middle of something. So I think about that. Cal Newport talks in this book. The book that I'm reading now, it's called Slow Productivity. It just came out. I was surprised, actually. I thought it was only going to come out next month, but I was on the waiting list and it popped up earlier. So he talks about the flexibility a person has to have in a work environment. And he talks about specifically, it's interesting because it's only like a year old, this concept. I don't know if people are familiar with. It really doesn't matter, but there's something like TikTok. People are familiar with TikTok. It's been in the news recently. And the way that TikTok oftentimes works is like there are these, I don't even know what they're called, like trendy video ideas. Like they're not all doing the same thing. Sometimes they are, but trendy video ideas where, you know, so anyways, the example of his book, people were showing themselves on social media as people who were, I forgot what it was called.
Influencer.
That's also what I'm saying. What they were doing was quiet quitting. I think that's what it was called. Quiet quitting. Anyone have heard of quiet quitting? Mm-hmm. Something like that. And there are a lot of these sort of like, Gen Xers or millennials were doing this. Basically what it means is just not really putting in effort in your job. Quiet quitting. It means you're not actually quitting, but I dare you to fire me type of things. You know, I'm not going to go the extra mile. I'm not going to do more than what I want. And this comes a lot back, you know, comes back to a lot of sort of the difficulty in the generation that's always been pampered or a generation. That's Jonathan and Haidt, the coddling of the American mind. We've talked about in the past. We could talk about it another time also. But he talks about the sort of the required flexibility. The required flexibility of being in a workforce, but doing what you feel satisfied by. And he says that a person who is so bogged down with all these distractions, you know, answering emails and going to meetings and all the administrative stuff that's ancillary to the work you want to be doing, over time, it will create a sort of a backlog, first of all, but also a disdain for your work because you never really get to do what you originally wanted. Now you don't want to do anything because you're just, you know, working tedious things all day. But he talks about, and again, it's not really germane to the pasuk, but because I'm reading the book, I'm making the connection, that he talks about the importance of having a sort of like a flexibility about how you work and what you work when. He talks about, you know, if a person asks you to do a job and you've got things to do, and you could technically squeeze in it, but it will sacrifice the quality of your other jobs and this one. So then he says that you have to have the flexibility to say, I'll do that a different time. And sort of the gumption to say to the person that, you know, I can't do that right now. If you give me a couple weeks, then I can get to it. But I think about that in terms of the flexibility versus the rigidness here, right? Ish toch achos maksha oref. If a person is being told what to do, and they, in the pasuk, it means, and they refuse, and they're stubborn. In my example, what I'm saying is the person is sort of like steadfast. I have to do everything, right? They're inflexible in accepting every job. So then, pesa yishaver ve'ein marpe, you're going to break, right? You're doing too many things, and either the quality of the work is going to go down, or like these millennials, they're going to sort of quiet quit because they just don't want to do the work anymore. It's just too much. They're taking too much on their plate, and then it just becomes too overwhelming. And you're just gonna break. You're gonna hit a breaking point where it's no longer enjoyable, and you're gonna hate your job. He talks about the sort of the difficulties of COVID and how that forced companies to sort of schedule people's tasks in such rapid succession that it gave no real time for people to sort of just focus on their work in a long-term fashion, in a deep fashion, as he said in previous books. So that's the connection that I made also, given what I've been thinking about. But ish tochachos maksha oref pesa yishavar ve'en marpe. That a person who is not accepting rebuke will ultimately break. And ve'en marpe here is an interesting last couple words. Ein marpe means there will be no healer. You could obviously interpret this to be Hashem. Hashem's not going to save you if over and over and over again you rejected the rebuke, you rejected the discipline, you rejected sort of the advice to grow, and instead you just stayed in your old ways. So Hashem says, look, I'm not gonna bend over again for you, you know, to figure out what I can do to help you. I tried to help you already. I gave you the boat, I gave you the helicopter, etc. And you're not accepting it. So Ve'ein Marpe, it's Mita Keneged Mita, as the Ralbag says, that you refused to improve, so I'm refusing to help you. That kind of thing. Kind of sounds harsh, but that's what it says. So that's one way of understanding. Ve'ein Marpe, in a more rational sense or in a social sense, could be, you know, almost like the boy who cried wolf. You know, the guy who says, okay, this time I'll be better. And he does it again. This time I'll be better. And after a while, even if Yishaver, he really does hit rock bottom, and he really does break and says, okay, I'm really going to be better. At that point, ain marpe. No one's going to help you at that point because you've been so reluctant and so stubborn to change, you're not going to be trusted that you're going to do it the next time either. A pasuk which seems to be almost out of nowhere, except for the fact that we already saw a similar concept last week, is pasuk Beis, 29:2, 29 Tchav Tes Beis. Birvos tzadikim yismach ha'am. When there are many righteous people, the nation will be glad. Uvim shol rasha yeyanacham. When the people see, there's an interesting diuk here. Who did I see this diuk from? It's not in the book. It's from the Kedusha Slavery of Levi Yitzchak and Berdichev. It says, even ordinary people, this is in the article footnote, who have no contact or even knowledge that there are many righteous people in their midst. They don't know that there are a lot of nice people around. It just happens to be. They too will be joyous. The presence of many genuinely good people elevates society and people are happy without realizing why. Very interesting concept. If you surround yourself with a positive environment, so you too will be glad. This pasuk doesn't mean that the tzaddikim will make them happy. It says just by having many tzaddikim around, you will become happier. Right? The importance of environmental architecture, if you will. Right? The environment dictates, you know, your personal mood. We've talked about that a little bit in the past. But also your success. That's Cal Newport talks about that also in this book, Slow Productivity. Making sure that your office or your working space reflects the work that you're doing. And he particularly talked about things that I need to work on. Sometimes there's no recourse otherwise, like days like today. Working from home oftentimes is a very bad recipe because that space is oftentimes a trigger for other activities than work, right? If you're in a space where you usually, you'll eat your lunch or you'll eat your dinner, so you might think you're working, but your general mood, your general affect towards your work is not as serious as it should be because that's where you eat dinner. That's right, and that the space itself affects your general attitude. So here, birvos tzadikim yismach aha'am. If you're around a lot of righteous people, then you'll be happy. Righteousness will bring you joy. However, uvimshol, that's very interesting, by the way, to note the contrast here. What makes people better when it comes to righteous people? Just their presence. What makes people miserable? Mishol Rasha. Mishol Rasha doesn't mean the presence of evil people. It means the authority of evil people, as they say it here. When the righteous are ascendant, the people will be glad. Ascendant is a weird word here. But in the rule of the wicked, people will groan. It's the ruling of the wicked. Meaning, there are different stages here. Even if the righteous didn't do any ruling, they weren't the authoritative body, but they're just around, you'll be happy no matter what. And if the people in power are Rishayim, if they're wicked, but they leave you alone, so you could probably get by also. But it's the Vimshol Rasha Yayanacham. It's the actual ruling. It's the authoritarian the authoritarian exercises of the of activities of the Rasha. Those are the ones you're going to be most complaining about, most groaning about. Yayanach. I think different times in American Jewish history, we've oscillated or vacillated. I don't know what the difference between those two are. Vacillated between the two, between that second category.
Vacillated is better. Oscillate is a pendulum.
Right, but I think they're similar and they go back and forth.
Yeah, you
vacillate might be more of a figurative term, so you might be right.
So we
have that middle stage, right? The pasuk's talking about where there are righteous people everywhere. That's going to make you good. And then the pasuk talks about the ruling, sort of the authoritarian wicked person. But here in America, it's not necessarily that we have any authoritarian wicked people. It depends how involved you are in politics and how jaded you are about it. But the most often, what we have is, at worst, a Russia who leaves us alone. And at best, a non-Russia who leaves us alone. You know, that's the beauty of, the Constitution. It's the beauty of American system, where nothing's too overbearing all at once. You can't just have a king impose new taxes. It's got to go through the whole legal process and has ramifications for other people too. And therefore, you know, it's pretty rare that things change so suddenly. Obviously, new laws can be enacted and whatever, but, you know, things that are on top of the mind. Speaking of other things that are top of the mind, news today, very unfortunate news about how the U.S. abstained from the vote as opposed to vetoing it, which is what they have been doing. Very, very troubling trend that we hope turns around very soon. Not even conditionalized, which is really crazy. I don't know what's crazier, the fact that the U.S. didn't veto, or the fact that the resolution wasn't even conditionalized on any release of hostages.
Yeah.
That is just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. The world has gone bonkers. But that's what that's what I think about in terms of, you know, this pasuk. Who's in charge and what is their moral compass? And here, I think we are, it's not really Mishol Russia because, you know, the U.S. is not telling us to do anything. But it's close to it when we get to that point of Yeyanach Am, where we're groaning because of, you know, the policies or lack thereof of the U.S. administration. There's a lot of speculation that a lot of that abstaining, I don't think abstinence would be the right word, abstention, a lot of that abstention, it has to do with Michigan and appeasing
right.
The
Minnesota, not just that, it's like
so who knows? It's who knows what is the true motivations of it. It's unfortunate, and certainly we are at a stage of Yeyanach Am that we are groaning because of the current state today. Obviously, a little bit of recency bias going into that, but definitely can hear that from all corners of the Jewish people today. Yeyanach Am, the groaning, and as Golda Meir once said, you know, we'd rather be hated and alive. Is that what she said? Hated and alive than pitied and dead. Something like that. Something along those lines. You know, better to be alive and people are upset with what we do than to be pitied, but also be dead because people are, you know, in favor with what we did. As Bibi has said, and you know, other Israeli politicians have said also, we will forge forth regardless of what the U.S. administration says. Mirtz Hashem, the Jewish people will find in this, you know, this month juxtaposing the Geula of Shushan with the Geula of Mitzrayim. Mirtz Hashem, we should find also a Geula from this issue as well. Not easy, but we are at a stage of Yeyanach Am today. So I feel for this pasuk, even if it doesn't exactly match the situation, it's not a Mishol Rasha, but certainly the acts seem to be morally morally vacuous, if you will, the acts of today. Okay. Ish ohev chachma yisamach aviv. A person who loves chachma, this is a very interesting pasuk. The person who loves chachma doesn't mean that they're sprat, doesn't mean that they're smart. Ish ohev chachma, this pasuk gimel. A person who loves wisdom. Again, it doesn't mean that they're smart, right? I think too often we confuse the, you know, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's some people that actually do think like this, unfortunately, that we think that parents are only proud of their children when their child is actually smart, as opposed to values wisdom. And that's what we're talking about here. Ohev Chachma doesn't mean that they have a high IQ. It means that they love to learn. And that should make a parent the proudest. If your child is committed to learning and growing, so that's what Yisamach Aviv, that's what a father is glad about. This comes back to two pesukim ago, which we started with, that, you know, ish tochachos makcha oref, yishavar vein marpe, that a person who's stubborn and won't take lessons from anybody else, so then, ein marpe, no one's going to help them out after a while. But here, while we're talking about Oev Chachma Yisamach Aviv, why Aviv specifically? We've seen this paradigm in the past. It's not an absolute rule, of course. But the father is oftentimes the one that's disciplining the child. And if in response to that discipline, the child's going to be Maksha Oref, the child's going to be stubborn, fight against the moral discipline of the father. So then, ultimately, Yishav Ravi and Marpeh, the child will break and there won't be anyone to help him out. If, however, the child enjoys, or not enjoys, but appreciates that love, appreciates that wisdom, so then Yisamach Aviv. I know I've told this story over in Pshis on the Parsha, Parsha's Matos or Maseh, where it talks about how God and Reuven came to Moshe Rabbeinu and asked that they can stay over on the Eivor HaYarden, or the Transjordan, if you will. And and Moshe's response is, how could you not go into the land with the people and fight alongside your brethren? Don't you know that God took you out of Egypt to bring you to this land, etc., etc.? We know what happens in the end, which is that Hashem allows it, and they give the Transjordan. But the Sfas Emes asks the question, I'm not sure, actually. This is a story about the Sfas Emes. Story about the Sfas Emes. One day, the Sfas Emes came late to learning. He came late. We know that the Sfas Emes' grandfather raised him, the Chidush Harim, because he was an orphan at a young age. And the Chidush Harim saw that the Sfas Emes came in late, and he gave him a talking to, you know, a whole diet. How did you come late? You know, you're supposed to be,
an example,
the paradigm, the prodigy. You're in line to take over the whole Chassidus of Ger. How could you come late to Seder, to learning? And he never once responded. So his Chavrusa said to him, like, why didn't you correct your grandfather? Like, you were in the Beis Medrash all night. Like, you were learning the entire night. So you came a little late for the morning because you were learning all night. You did an extra 10 hours of learning. It's not that you're missing out, you know, a half hour of learning. You did an extra 9.5 hours. So why did you tell your grandfather that's what happened? So the Sfas Emes says over this shtickel from the Reuven and God. Why didn't Reuven and God tell Moshe Rabbeinu, whoa, 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 we're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. We're going to help them fight. We never said we weren't going to do that. Instead, they just let Moshe talk and talk and talk. And the drasha is this pasuk. Ish ohev chachma yisamach aviv. That there's a value in loving to hear wisdom. Loving to hear, even if it's rebuke. Even if the person is teaching you something that you already know. But if you're ohev chachma, if you love wisdom, you want to hear from the people that have it. You want to just learn from them, even if you already know it. So, it's funny. Sometimes...
I think it depends what you're accused of.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, it depends, for sure. It's all contextual, for sure. I remember when I was in YU, I was in Rav Herschel Schachter Shlita's, his shiur. So there were people that were in that shiur for years. I don't know if they're still in it or not. But years, like decades after, you know, just wanting to hear from Rav Schachter. Mm-hmm. Rav Schachter famously says that every year he gives the same shiur. It's just a matter of where he starts. You know, sometimes you start in the Gemara in Shabbos, and then you work in, because he knows so much, he works in, this connects to a Gemara in Ksubas, this connects to a Gemara in Kedushin, this connects to Gemara Bava Metzia and Bava Basra, and you go through all of Shas every year. Is the next year, so he starts in Bava Basra. But then he connects to the Gemara in Shabbos, he connects to the Gemara in Kedushin, right? He's able to connect all the Gemaras. So he famously says, I give the same shiur every year. It's just a matter of where I start, you know? That's what he says. And there are some students in that shiur that have absolutely heard the same shiur over and over and over, and they still go to shiur. Because they're just ohev chachma. They're people that love wisdom. They just love to learn. There are some people that are natural students, but also just people, if you value the material enough, even if you're not a natural student, but you just value education, you value wisdom. So you will make your father proud. I don't know if Rashi says it here, but I'm sure some explain this in a more figurative sense, referring to Hashem. You love chachma, which is essentially Hashem's wisdom, so then you're going to make him proud. You're going to make Hashem proud. The next part of the pasuk is, you know, very interestingly debated. What in the world does this mean? I'm going to ask you, Sarita, in a second. V'roez zonos ya'abed hon. Roez zonos ya'abed hon. What do you have, Sarita?
Company of companion of harlots will lose a fortune.
Yes, roe from like the word reyecha. You have to reyecha kamocha, right?
It seems incongruous. It doesn't seem like.
Right. It doesn't seem like the first part of the pasuk connects to the second part. What does the first part, which is loving wisdom, and making your father proud, what does that have to do with befriending harlots and losing your money? Some explain that it's referring to the father's money. The father is the one that gives the kid the proper, you know, whether it's allowance or investments or job opportunities, and then the kid goes and squanders the money away on harlots. Right, right. So for that, I believe, you're right. For that, I believe it might be a connection to the first part of the pasuk, which is Ish Ohev Chachma, a person who loves wisdom, is a person who has a certain moral clarity. And without that moral clarity, they are roezonos. They're going to follow after their desires. This is just one desire. You're right, it could have been other desires. But this is a repeated theme throughout Mishle that, you know, the desire that he chooses is specifically harlotry or specifically illicit relations. I'm trying to find a specific... Here.
We had something like that before.
Yeah, we've seen it before. So as I said before, some explain that the end of the pasuk Ya'abed Hon is a reference to money. The father gave him money, and then you know he squandered it. The Ra'abag has such a beautiful comment here, and this is one of those that you know I don't do social media, so I don't know. But I remember that when I used to be on Facebook, or I've seen comments from other people that they would put like inspirational quotes or profound quotes on their social media. This would be in that category. Such a beautiful paraphrasing of what the concept means according to the Ra'abag. Mi shenimshach el hataivos v'roezonos hu ye'abed hon aviv. If somebody chases after harlotry, they are losing out on the fortune of their father. What does that mean? Ya'aved mimenu kinyan kol hon v'chol shleimus enoshi. V'chol shleimut enoshi. What is shleimut enoshi? What do you think, Sarita?
Complete enosh.
What is enosh? Personhood. Like enosh could be a word for a person. Enoshi here means the completion of their potential. A person who heard all of their father's discipline. He heard how the father wanted him to grow up. He heard the father said, do your homework. He heard the father say, you know, be nice person. He heard the father say, be patient. He heard the father say, be a kind person. And instead, he decides, I'm going to follow my desires. And instead, I'm going to follow after Zonos. I'm going to follow after harlots. So says the Ra'abag, it's not just that you lost money, but you have lost out on the opportunity to become a full person. Because your father was trying to teach you what it meant to be a full person. Shleimut enoshi, a complete person. And you have squandered that fortune, not monetary fortune. Hon aviv here is a reference to the fact that you have squandered the chachma of your father. And it could be anyone, it could be a teacher, it could be a community, it could be Hashem, whatever. But That's the connection between the two parts of the pasuk. Ish ohev chachma yisamach aviv, a person who loves wisdom makes his father proud because his father sees that he has taken to heart the messages, the lessons, the moral compass that he gave over to him. But if you're roezonos, if a person is roezonos, a person is chasing after that kind of licentiousness. So then, Ya'abed Hon, you have lost riches. You know, it's such a beautiful, unfortunate, a beautiful criticism, a beautiful presentation of the criticism. Because I think sometimes we, you know, especially today, we assume that knowledge is one of these, dime a dozen commodities. Oh, you want to learn about something? I'll look it up on YouTube. You want to learn about, you want to be educated in this, that, I'll ask Google about it. And we don't realize that the discipline or the moral guidance that we get from teachers and from parents is itself riches. It's a fortune. You are losing out on the fortune of your parents' and your teachers' guidance. You think you can fill it in by educating yourself online. It's not the same thing. In terms of shleimut enoshi, becoming a full person, reaching your fullest potential as a person that can develop, you know, and be the best person you can be, you're not going to get that from YouTube. You're not going to get that from Google. The person you're going to be is dictated by the people who you're willing to take guidance from. The people who you look to for examples, people you look to understand how to live, the examples that they set in their behaviors. That is hone, that is a fortune, that's riches. We all have riches of examples around us. I guess that does connect to the previous pasuk. Birvos tzaddikim yismach ha'am. When you have righteous people around you, you'll be glad because you'll have those good examples. Ya'abed hon, we should all realize the hone that's all around us, the people that can lead us as exemplars of good behavior. They are riches, they are a fortune that if you don't listen, if you're not ohev chachma, if you don't value the wisdom that they have to impart, so you will lose out riches, you will lose out on a fortune, not monetary fortune, the fortune of shleimut enoshi, the fortune of reaching your fullest potential. A beautiful phrase from the Ralbag, ya'abed mimenu kinan kol hon v'chol shleimut enoshi. You will lose the greatest of fortunes, the fortune of fulfilling your potential. Really, you know, stark, but powerful words. Speaking of governance, it seems like we're going back and forth here. Aleph and Gimel fit with each other. Beis and Dalet fit with each other. Melech b'mishpat yamid aretz. Rashi quotes this pasuk in Sefer, at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. Melech b'mishpat yamid aretz. With justice, you can establish the land. Yamid aretz means you can create a certain balance, a certain stability of the land, of the people. A king who is just can create stability. If he's going to manipulate the system, make it, you know, work in his own favor out of greed or out of taxation or whatever, you are not allowing the system to establish itself properly. V'ish trumos yehersena. Interestingly enough, this is one pasuk, we haven't had one of these in a bit, where both phrases are negative, right? As opposed to what Shlomo Melech usually does, which is half the pasuk is do this well, half the pasuk is don't do this well. You're going to be, you know, cause and effect in both positive and negative, like we've seen tonight. Here, they're both negative. Sorry, actually, I'm sorry. The first part is sorry. You're right. I was thinking about the implications, the negative implications of the first part. But you're right. Technically, he is talking about the positive of justice. I had just phrased it in the negative. That creates stability if you act with justice. Sorry, the ish trumos yeresena. What does it say there?
In the margin, it says dishonest rulers.
Right.
In the country, so it's putting it in the negative.
Right. Exactly. The thrust of the pasuk is the negative impact. But really, the words are actually positive at the beginning. I'm sorry. Melech b'mishpat yamid aretz. The ish trumos yeresena. Rashi quotes this pasuk. The Medrash says, "What is ish trumot yeresena?" So trumot, you know what trumot means? Usually truma means a tithe, or not really a tithe, but a tithe would be maaser, but a donation, a contribution. So the reason...
Right.
So here, what does trumot mean? Why does... I know, it means graft, I saw it. But why, what is the word truma from? When we give a contribution or we give a tithe, why is it called teruma?
Tenth or something?
No. What's the root of the word truma? Is resh mem hey. What's rama?
Rama is level.
A level.
A madriga.
A higher level. Rama is higher. Okay. Right? Or rama is a high level. Like Ramat Gan, right? You know, different cities that are Yad Rama, and you know, a raised hand. So here, Trumot, in terms of the tithing, what it means is you are taking it, you are lifting it above your usual food. You are lifting it above. You are elevating it to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. That's why it's Truma. You're elevating it from your food to kedusha. So here, ish trumot, at least according to Rashi, means ish geut, elevated, not in, proud. Correct. Elevated meaning haughty. Ish trumot, a person who is full of themselves. They are what's it called? They puff themselves up. I don't know. Narcissistic. Yeah, I'm trying to find like an English corollary.
Arrogant.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's like in English, I think there's a word that also means like to elevate, which is used for haughtiness.
Does
haughty means higher? I didn't know that, so that's not what I'm thinking of. But puff yourself up, maybe elevate yourself. There might be another word I'm not thinking of. Either way, ish trumot, a person who is so full of themselves, they think so highly of themselves. Yeher sena, they will destroy. All right, they'll destroy the land. There's a fascinating midrash that I like to quote. I think I've quoted in the Tuesday class, not recently though. If you remember, a couple months ago, we saw a pasuk which was similar to this, and I was racking my brain for like 3 minutes. I was saying, I know this pasuk, and I looked it up, and I couldn't find it. It's because this is the pasuk that I was thinking of. The pasuk says, "Ish trumot yeharsena." The Midrash tells us that this might be referring to someone who is actually lofty, not a person who thinks that they're lofty. The pasuk says, "Ish trumot." He is really actually an elevated person. Says the Medrash Chazal say, Ish Trumot here is referring to a person who is of a lofty scholarly status. They know a lot of Torah. But they're so above everyone else, they won't help anyone else. They feel like they're above the fray. They're above everyone else. A person comes, the Medrash says, let's say, I think the example of the Medrash was an Almana. A widow comes to him and asks him a Shaila. And he says, "No, not right now. I'm busy learning something like that. I'm studying. You come back to me later." It relates to Cal Newport again. But he says, he pushes them off and says, I can't deal with you. I'm studying. So that's ish trumot. He elevates himself above other people. So then yeher sena. That is the recipe for the destruction of the Jewish community. Because we need people who are willing. We talked about this a few weeks ago by Moshe Rabbeinu. After the Egel Azav, according to, what was it, Siv? I don't remember. A couple weeks ago, Moshe Rabbeinu goes back into the camp, goes back into Klal Yisrael and helps them, you know, the day-to-day stuff. He just learned all of Torah Kula, Kol Torah Kula, and instead he goes and helps people, you know, put on tefillin and things like that, if you remember the examples I gave. Ish trumot yeharsena, if you are someone who has a lofty level, you learned a lot of Torah, and now you're not helping people with all that Torah, yeharsena, what's the point? What's the point? The Gemara tells us, amenas lasos, the whole point of Torah is in order to do it. And if you're just going to learn, and not give it over to other people, so then that's the destruction of Torah, not the building up of it. Always important to keep that in mind in terms of the things that we know shouldn't be kept to ourselves. It should be shared. Yeah.
Why would they use the word graft in the translation?
I don't know what the word graft means.
I don't know.
Graft is cheating and money. I don't know how better to say it. But.
Interesting. So there is another explanation of the true mote here. As I said before, is referring to contributions. Let me see. I think, who says it? Yeah, the art scroll quotes it from the Meiri, that ish trumot means a person who levies taxes. Like trumot, like you make people give you contributions. So that might be grafting, meaning like, asking from people, siphoning off their money, grafting. So maybe that's why.
I don't understand why the two parts of the sentence are juxtaposed, because justice is like, you know, being righteousness, and then
right.
Someone being so haughty that they're above everything is so opposite that.
Right. So they're it's a contrast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've never understood that. Like, it's so esoteric. You know.
Yeah.
I understood that sentence without your explanation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, it's hard. The previous one also was a little bit ambiguous. That's why we have the Mefarshim to help us out a little bit. Yeah. I'm trying to read here from the Mesudas David. Yeah. It's basically, he's saying basically that when there's greed from the ruler, so then they'll cut corners and make and prevent people from prospering. Should we do the next one? No, let's keep the next one for next week, Mirtz Hashem. We'll continue with Pasuk Hey, Mirtz Hashem next week. Yeah, right. It's a little better. But there are different ways of understanding it also. Okay, Shkayach, Mirtz Hashem. We'll continue then. Thank you everyone for joining. I wish you have a good night.